you know, what gets measured gets done. And then I think add on top of that, what gets measured and reported on, the rate of improvement increases. So it's just having that accountability is like, hey, you know, here we're at in the project, and every week we're just following up on the numbers. Here's where we're at on our budget. Here's how much is completed. Here's the goal. I mean, like, you don't even really need to say much after that. You just look at the data, and the person who's, you know, responsible for it can just see, oh, I'm ahead or not on this. Right. And then it gives you a lot of opportunity for coaching and help and giving them tools to succeed.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
John Taggy is a biomedical engineer turned real estate investor. He uses a data and science approach to investing. He currently has 1,500 single family residence doors and 750 multifamily doors. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam, man, super excited and honored to be on the show with you. And yeah, excited to dive on in. Hopefully, you know, we can get some good golden nuggets for the audience.
Absolutely, Sean. Appreciate you coming on today. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, started in Memphis, Tennessee. I moved from Utah to Memphis and joined on with some partners and started doing turnkey single family flips. So flipped 1,500 single family houses. I came on as a VP of operations and got made partner after 2 years. Ramped that up a lot, that business. We're up to doing about 320 houses a year at one time in the heyday. And then about 3-4 years ago, started doing multifamily syndications and syndicated about 5 different complexes and 750 doors. And we currently have 650 that were still in the operating phase.
Wow. Okay. So you came on as partner there at a firm here in Memphis, and you guys did your, you helped do 1,500 single family residence flips. Then you guys, and you're doing, what'd you say, on average, I guess 320 a year?
Yeah. The highest we did in 1 year, but yeah, 250 or so a year to 320. Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot. I mean, that's a house every single day. Almost.
Hey, we were, that was our goal. A house a day, you know, keeps the doctor away. We were trying that. We got up there. It gets a little hectic after a while.
Yeah. No, I can't. I mean, I don't even want to imagine that, right? I mean, like, there's some businesses where you're like, oh my gosh, someday, like, maybe we'll grow to that size. Like, I have no aspirations of that. When I think about that, I'm like, no, man, I'm already bald. Like, I don't ever want to do a house.
Yeah.
I don't care what the payoff is. That's a lot.
There's only a few in the whole country that I even do up to there. I mean, I only knew maybe 5 that were in the 300 plus in the whole country. And it's for a reason. And that's kind of why we started flipping. I'd rather do 100 houses one time instead of 100 houses 100 times, right? So multifamily.
Right. So you got into multifamily. And did you do this on your own or there with that firm here?
Yeah, with the same partners. We kind of had a lot of big investor lists, already had rental crews and everything. And it's a lot easier for them to do 20 doors in one little area instead of 20 kind of spread out. So yeah, it just really helped out from that perspective and just kind of started slowly growing that.
Was there a shift in the model? Because in the turnkey residence model, you know, it's for most turnkey providers, at least, it's buy the house, renovate it, put a tenant in place, and then sell that individual home off to an investor. But when you're doing an apartment complex, the model is typically, as a syndicator, raise the money, buy the apartment complex, hold it in house, execute the business plan, and sell it later on down the road when it makes sense to exit. What was the model in the multifamily space?
Yeah. So like I said, the single family, yeah, we were done with them in 90 days or so. Just a quick flip with the multifamily. Yeah. They're more a year or two hold. And then a couple others where we're doing a 5-year hold model with a refinance in it. And the first one we just did with our own capital, you know, played around with our own money first, made the mistakes and learned, and it was very successful. So then the other four, we brought on investors, put in a lot of our own money as well. And one we hope to be selling maybe summer of 2024. That'll be like a 2-year, I guess, a flip for a multifamily. Is probably that's like the timeline for a multifamily flip. Pretty and then the others, flip, yeah. And then two others we've refinanced, pulled out like 70 to 85% of the investor's capital, and we'll hold on to them for another 3 years, completing like a 5-year total hold.
Right. Okay. Cool. So you said
just kind of depended on the. you know, the investment, the area, you know, the IRR we could achieve if we think we could flip it quickly or hold on longer. So we just kind of analyzed each deal and had a different plan.
Got it. Okay. So you said you made some mistakes in the first one with your own capital. What would you say some of those mistakes are?
Yeah. So this one we bought during COVID time. So underestimating and really not predicting inflation and rehab costs and material costs just going through the roof through all that. And then we had a plumbing issue where we had, you know, it was like 20, 30 grand. We had to dig out a plumbing line and fix all that. And it just took a while. Also working with the city through COVID when a lot of their employees are, you know, whatever, working from home or whatever. And it just took a while to get all that done. So it's like, some things like that, you know, just some are unforeseeable, but some we could have planned a bit better.
Yeah. In building in, I guess that margin for those unforeseeable things is probably just something you do, I guess, probably naturally at this point.
Correct.
But you're right. Yeah. In COVID getting inspections. I don't know. Were you guys part of the Zoom inspections? Did you guys have any of that stuff going
no,
on?
No, we weren't lucky enough to get those. I think, yeah, some though, like the, what is it? The Section 8, they would just have us like inspected ourselves. So we're like, yeah, it looks great. You know, looks, you know, there's a few things we're going to fix, but yeah.
Right. But no, everything else is perfect. I swear. Yeah, we had some of that here. I'm surprised you guys didn't see that as well. So it, yeah, there was some Zoom inspections that occurred. I thought it was pretty funny. Nice. Like, how are you doing a structural inspect anyway?
Yeah.
Those days right. are behind us, but, yes. But none of those are things that I don't hear, you know, in, you know, to right now we're hearing a lot of pain in the market. We're seeing a lot of pain in the market where people are going, hey, you know what? They took out short-term debt and now they can't refi or
yes.
they, you know, they didn't, you know, capitalize the deal properly. And so expenses, yeah. you know, I just had another guest on the show today that their insurance costs in Florida have, you know, quadrupled. Yeah. since they acquired the asset a couple of years ago, and suddenly they're cash flow negative just because of, you know, enormous insurance premiums.
Right.
So it doesn't sound like you made any of those mistakes. It was just, you know, some of the more common ones along the way where you're like, oh, well that kind of stunk, but we figured it out and keep moving.
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome. Sure. That's awesome. What is your plan moving forward? Are you still working with this same group? Cause now you've even relocated back to Utah.
Yeah. So I've exited the single family turnkey flipping, you know, just a grind. I'd rather do multifamily. So I'm off on my own doing Acorn Equity and Acquisitions is my company. And we actually have under contract. So I've been searching this whole year for a multifamily, you know, tons of brokers and, you know, seller expectations are still high. So we finally got one down to the right price where it fits our, you know, returns and business plan model. So we have a 206 unit under contract in Nashville, Tennessee. Simple value add C class, you know, 1970s build type of house, multifamily, and going to raise rents $200 a door across all the units, with, you know, 2 million in repairs or so.
Got it. Okay. Well, let's dig into this particular asset because I think this is an interesting conversation. You mentioned C class. We're seeing a lot of C class defaults. We're seeing assets trade below what they were purchased for 2 years ago. Currently in C class, why do you feel right. like now is a good time to buy a C class asset? I guess just tell me why this asset in particular makes sense for you.
Right. Yeah. So we're buying it at an attractive price. So about 20% below the previous years. And it's this group. Why? Well, the group has, they own thousands of units. They're a larger real estate private equity firm. And this is their last one in Nashville. And most of their plans and their funds they have, they're open for 5 years. And so they need to close the fund. And this is like the last one in the Nashville area. Most of their other assets are in Texas. So, I mean, they've owned it for 5 years. So they're doing really well, even at the price selling it below market of 2 years ago or a year ago market. It's fine for them. So a win for them and then a win for us because we're getting it down lower, an attractive entry. And then I feel, you know, my data and research, I feel very, you know, strong on Nashville, the headwinds and the tailwinds behind it of, you know, long-term, maybe there might be a down year in the next 5 years. I mean, I think there will be, but in 5 years, long-term, I think it's going to average out good appreciation and rent growth.
Right. And I think picking your market is one of the things that plays into a big part of your data and also your research. Obviously you got to spend some time here. In Tennessee, actually, how long were you here? You lived here for a decade.
Yes, almost, 6 years.
Six years. Okay. You're here for 6 years, so you got a good feel for what the state has to offer. And Nashville, in particular, you know, obviously has some tailwinds to it that, you know, a lot of cities don't. So I don't know where Nashville ranks on the fastest growing cities in the U.S., but yeah, I think it's up there.
Yeah, it's always, you know, up there with job growth and this. And then another thing nice about Nashville, I don't know if you want to dive too much into it, but it's still below the national average cost of living. And like, if you've been to Nashville, you walk that city, you're like, this is a Dallas, Houston, you know, this is, you know, it's not in New York yet, but this is up and coming city where it's going to be expensive someday. So it's still below the national average cost of living.
Which I think in Tennessee in general, probably exactly. still trends mm-hmm. below that, which is great. You know, for those of us that live here, we appreciate the lower certainly.
Costs yes. It's nice, but we can obviously see it's not going to be that way forever. I think.
I don't know. I think Memphis might be.
Yeah, maybe some specific city. Yes, Memphis maybe, but Nashville, Chattanooga, Knoxville. Those are nice cities.
They are. They are indeed. What are some things you said you use a science and data approach to investing? What does that mean to you?
I mean, yeah. So it's, you know, data spreadsheets. So when I was doing biomedical, I did artificial heart research. And so, yeah, learned a lot of just, you know, using the scientific theory, data and spreadsheets, and basically just, you know, getting averages and then looking at macro and micro trends. So yeah, just kind of see that with Nashville, you know, the rent growth appreciation, everything like that. Then also, of course, you know, jobs coming in and all that stuff is what I use. And that's kind of how I picked Memphis about 7 years ago. Is I just saw it had a high rent to value ratio, did that across the whole country and is one of the top three consistently. Now it's not quite so much. So yeah.
Yeah, we've certainly seen a price appreciation here in Memphis. Again, you know, compared to a national average, it's still probably on the lower end of things. Are there anything though, but I guess when you say you use data in a scientific method approach, I mean, is there anything that you say, hey, this is a data point I look at that many people wouldn't think to consider?
I mean, man, it's so with CoStar and all the data, it's really just, it's out there for everyone. It just really takes that work though of gathering several cities, comparing them across one another and diving into that. So I can't say I have a secret sauce. I wish I did. maybe I wouldn't tell it if I did, but I really don't. I swear I don't. It's that.
Okay. I was hoping for something really random where you're like, man, you know what? I consider the number of feet of, you know, plumbing in any given city. Like, wait, that's weird, dude.
Right. Yeah.
But somehow you figured out that translates into higher rents. I don't know. Just throwing things out there. Okay. So no secret sauce, but yet there's still opportunity out there. What did you do to make yourself an attractive buyer to this seller?
Right. Yeah. So we, you know what, we were just there consistently. So it was actually this broker relationship we've built up over several months. So that really, there were two or three other offers. We were actually a little bit lower, but the fact that we were consistently showing up, you know, and making offers on other deals, maybe getting outbid a little bit and just showing that we're here consistently. And then the fact that we own, you know, so I'm partnering up with Compass Capital, Sam Froer and Michael Wheatley. They're kind of my, I've known them from college as well. Good buddies of mine. We've talked for 6 years wanting to do a deal together. So this is one we're finally on together. And so that as well as we own 200 units nearby and was able to perform on those, raise rents, and execute on the business plan.
Got it. Okay. No, that's super cool. That's super cool. So Compass Capital, are they going to be your boots on the ground running it?
They're in the boots on the ground and then a property management company as well over there. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, cool. Cause that was gonna be my next question. I was gonna say, okay, so you're now living in Utah. How are you taking this down? How are you selecting contractors? How are you getting this thing, on the ground?
So already performed the property management company has a rental company in house, which I like that as well, you know, alignment. And they actually hit the budget on the other 200 units. Which is, that was like, you know, that's some of the first questions, like, can they perform on the budget? And that's usually the roll of the dice when you start in a new market is your contractor. Cause I mean, us, whenever we try a new contractor, we're just like, hey, it's a third chance. We keep them for a year or longer. Right. You know, it's just something that risk you take. So it's nice to know that we already have tested that and they've proven and they have, you know, thousands of other doors they've performed on.
repetition is so much easier than starting over and trying to figure it out from the beginning. I think the stat you used there, which is there's a 1/3 chance that you'll still be working together in a year when it comes to dealing with your general con, which is unfortunate, but it's a reality of things.
Yeah. It's that, maybe even less sometimes. Yeah.
Right. Oh man. Yeah. That's really cool. I like that. So you've already got the business plan in place. You've already got the partners. You've already got the renovation, the property management. You guys are just hitting go. Is there any other hair on this deal that you look at and say, hey man, this is going to be an obstacle we're going to have to overcome? And if so, how are you going to do it?
Great question, Sam. So yeah, for us, it's just a straight base hit, which I kind of like. It's like, someone smart told me, if you make money on something, and it performs well, you've done it a few times, just keep doing it, do it and do it again. So this one is, we're just, going in, we're renovating the exterior, making it look nice. Some of the railings and, the paint chipping, the roofs, the exterior siding on some units. Then in the interiors, we're just, we're putting in what's for the market rent. So we're not going anything too fancy and just keeping it in line. And simply what it is just the current property manager, they haven't risen rents much over the past 2 years. And as we know, rents have gone up 20%. And so it's just simply asking, and the property's 99% occupied. So that shows me they're not pushing rents really high. Is they're just kind of complacent. It's just kind of easier just to renew and maybe not even ask for an increase. And so we're going to push that a little bit. And get it up to market rents.
Right. Well, and especially in the Nashville market, which again, it was just seeing incredible growth. If your rents aren't keeping pace, what do you think about this? I heard this strategy one time. A guy came on the show. He's buying mobile home parks, and one of the things that he required his sellers to do was to raise rents before they bought the property.
That, dude, I like that a lot. It's like, hey, let's test this on, whatever's vacant right now. Let's bump it up to whatever, $100 more a month. I like that a lot. Yeah, we haven't tried that on this one, but I've heard a couple of guys doing that. I think that's a great strategy. Maybe even writing that in your contract and just, getting the feedback from the leasing people.
Getting the feedback from the leasing people and then making the sellers the bad guys. I mean, that was his strategy. He said, hey, look, one, we get a raise in rents, and then we also come in, without having to get the flack of, oh, we just bought the property and now you guys are, coming in here and raising prices and all that. The previous seller did it.
Right.
So
another thing, like, this is totally a crazy idea of that, was like, why not maybe like renovate it to what you kind of are going to make the units renovated at, and do an A/B split test of two units in the nicer, higher range, which is kind of what our model is, versus the current ones at maybe just even a little less in your range, but higher than currently. Obviously, like, you got to write something in of who's going to pay for those renovations and everything. But I mean, that may be worth the, whatever, 10, 20 grand risk.
Right.
To kind of know if you can prove the theory.
Right. No, I think that's great. I think that's great. And that's that. I mean, and again, people are all constantly looking for new ways or new strategies to add value. And that term add value is getting tougher to do. I mean,
yes, for sure.
So, taking some creative strategies like that, I think, is really, really important. Let's shift gears here a little bit. You said you spent all year working to get this 206 unit under contract. You're moving forward with that. That sounds amazing. But I know we talked about this before the show began. You've also got your hands in business. So tell me why you're kind of splitting your focus here.
Right. Yeah. So of course, flipped 1500 single family houses, and I had, renovation crews, and they had subcontractors. And what I've just seen from the single family residential era of any HVAC, plumbing, electrical, roofing, fencing, I mean, any type of contractor, if you answer your phone, number one, show up to the job and give a bid, and then actually do what you're going to say, you're probably ahead of 80%, 90% of the competition.
Yes.
And so, I'm under contract, under LOI on an HVAC company. And it's also, I'm keeping one of the partner who's licensed on, will stay on. So it's kind of nice. Is I'm good at high level business stuff, marketing, systems and processes, and acquiring more. And so, but then I have a day-to-day operator as well that I'm partnering up with. So it'll free up a bit of my time, take up a bit of my time, but I'll learn a lot from that and can translate the business principles for multifamily and also the renovation side.
Is that business in Utah or is that back here in Tennessee?
It's in Utah.
Okay. The skilled trades, I mean, finding, yes, as you said, finding not just, I think the four criteria, whatever, four or five criteria you gave, one is for any contractor to show up, but finding then also the skilled trades. I mean, those are, right, those are the places where it is, like you mentioned, plumbers, electricians, HVAC guys, you get inside of those three and that, and if you can, again, answer the phone and show up, I mean, I commonly won't even ask for a second bid if you're competent in any of those three trades and you show up and you're like,
right, yeah, we can get it done. I mean, I was, cause yeah, I was, you know, trying to personally get a house renovated and like, I literally had to call, I think three or four guys, and two of them didn't answer. Then two answered, but then one didn't show up and one showed up like 2 weeks later. And the guy that showed up 2 weeks later, he got the job because I was just quite frankly, just like, I need to get this done and I'm tired of this. Like, just let's do it. And so it's crazy. And what I got good at when we flipped the 1500 single family houses is we had a ton of marketing and made a ton of offers and went on a ton of appointments to make offers personally at people's houses. And so I had a VA, basically a call center, in-house call center, scripts, and then boots on the ground guys making offers. And so I'm kind of going to apply that principles and softwares that I connect together because we follow up with automated texts and emails and tasks to, you know, call and all of that. So kind of going to use all those processes to be, you know, be the person answering the phone, because basically it's just a race to the answering the phone and showing up,
right,
as you'll get the business. Then the second end, of course, is, you know, the hiring people, managing the crews, making sure they're doing a job well done, have processes as well for that, which I learned a lot from flipping 1500 single family houses. And of course, some of the rentals go overboard and we're not doing as well in a timely manner and things like that. So using data and actually tracking it and reporting it weekly, right? So, I mean, this is for anything, but in you know, this works for multifamily syndication as well, as, right? You just, what is it? There's someone that said, you know, what gets measured gets done. And then I think add on top of that, what gets measured and reported on, the rate of improvement increases. Oh, so man, it's just having that accountability is like, hey, you know, here we're at in the project. And every week we're just following up on the numbers. Here's where we're at on our budget. Here's how much is completed. Here's the goal. I mean, like, you don't even really need to say much after that. You just look at the data and the person who's, you know, responsible for it can just see, oh, I'm ahead or not on this. Right. And then right, it gives you a lot of opportunity for coaching and help and giving them tools to succeed.
That's really cool. I love that. I love that idea of, I mean, because there are, they're cross disciplines, you know, or they're disciplines that, that go across all of these different segments from an HVAC, right, company to a multifamily property. It's kind of all the same in that, that the measuring, the key performance indicators, tracking all that stuff and figuring, yes, out where people are is really powerful.
And what I like too is when I was flipping a house, I had to do 10 of those things, right? 10 different trades and electricians, plumbers, painters, or this. It's just one simple, hey, just the HVAC system. We can focus on that. So I don't know, frankly, I think it's simpler, right? It's much simpler than flipping a house. So
I would agree, man. There's I don't have any desire to go back to flipping houses at all. So right, I'm like you, I don't miss it. Certainly was good to me, but I don't miss it. Sean, thank you for taking the time here to come on the show today. I certainly appreciate it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. So my company, Acorn Equity and Acquisitions, the website is Acorn EA, just short for equityacquisitions.com. And, you know, also I'm on LinkedIn, Sean Taggy, and I have a YouTube channel, Sean Taggy. I'm just starting and putting out private equity and real estate investing things in there. So yeah, hey, Sam, dude, man, it was a great pleasure being on the show. Thanks to all your listeners, and hopefully you got a little golden nugget and helped you out a bit.
Absolutely, we did. Sean, thank you again for coming on the show today. We'll make sure we include your website and all those links right there in the show notes. Certainly appreciate it, and have a great rest of your day.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.